All right. Good morning, everyone. You've got AC running the handle this morning. Current block height is 906,969 blocks. One Bitcoin is still one Bitcoin. And if you want to exchange that for cuckbucks, that's $118,280 or roundabout there. Hash rate over that last 2016 blocks is about 907 exahash. Over the last 90 days is 885 exahash. Today we're going to jump into a couple topics. And I think we've got Gabe Lord, who is going to be running part of the conversation, but I've got to get him BFP. I've got invites out to you guys. Other than that, want to invite anyone else out there who's interested, in maybe joining the conversation to jump on up. Morning, BFP. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, AC. I missed 15 seconds of that because of the delay, but I think you were just giving the numbers.
Yeah, just giving a couple numbers, and then I'm trying to work some of the hosting in the background. I keep seeing Gabe come up with requests to join as a speaker. But for some reason, it's not working. Maybe Gabe, if you can hear me, drop off and then jump back in. And I'll send you an invite from here as well. Other than that, BFP, what's top of mind for you this morning?
Nothing much. Just enjoying the beautiful morning and drinking my coffee, watching the Bitcoin stagnant, waiting for the down or the up coiled spring. Hoping for the up as usual, but you never know.
Good morning, y'all. How am I coming through?
I got you, Gabe.
Loud and nice. Clear.
Oh, and then Gabe, I see you dropped again. Yeah, BFP, you know, I think it's definitely going to be a coiled spring. I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed with the price action, hoping for, you know, massive rips to the upside. I think we're going to be steady and gradual, and people are going to, you know, they're going to hate the boredom as we just creep up small percentages here and there over a longer duration than what more experienced Bitcoiners are used to, but we'll see.
Yeah, did you see the new thing that MSTR came out with, that Stretch, I guess? I did.
And you know, it's interesting that I think they're the best postured for any potential downturn in the next couple years. Just the rate of products that they're coming out with and how it's catering to different pools of capital that might otherwise not have exposure or not be able to buy Bitcoin. I think they're just the best positioned. And yeah, Stretch is another unique one. It's specifically targeting savings accounts and money market funds, offering effectively a 9% yield annually, paid out monthly on the holdings of Stretch, and they've got the financial levers pegged to basically keep that at par. So it's going to fluctuate between $99 and $101. And any changes beyond those, that price range, they can either implement a selling ATM at the market, or they can increase. So it's a variable yield. And so they can increase or decrease the yield based on the price actions. I think that's probably one of the most unique of the many unique products that they have out there.
I've noticed. We can hear you. Go ahead, Gabe.
All right. How's this? You got me now?
There you go. All right. I gotcha.
Cool. Yeah, the phone did not want to participate, so I've gone to the laptop. So let me know if you get any audio issues as I traverse the matrix here. So good morning, everybody. I'll go ahead and step in if everybody's good with that. So it's it's Thursday, July 24th. Here we are. Black height at the time of Daily Intelligence Bulletin is 906.953. We are Bitcoin veterans. We're Bitcoiners. We're veterans. It's pretty much self-explanatory. We're here to provide community. We're here to provide inspiration. We're here to be a place where people who are seeking a mission and purpose can come together and get in step and find alignment in something that is truly transforming the world. So here we are. Let's jump into the DIB a little bit. If you're not already receiving that, make sure that you're following us on our X handle, Twitter. We're also on Nostr. We have a DIB specifically for Nostr. So get on there, give us some zaps, show us some love. We got a team of people collecting this information and making it available. And I might be biased, but it doesn't change the fact that it's true that this is the absolute best source of information that you're going to receive every single day. So jumping on into it, bottom line up front, World Court says pay up for climate. Thailand hits Cambodia with airstrikes. DNI refers to Obama to DOJ for Russia hoax. Interesting. U.S. House subpoenas Ghislaine Maxwell. Ninth Circuit upholds ban on Trump birthright citizenship ban. Senate's new crypto bill to ignite coin ICOs. New crypto is backed by Swiss gold. Fascinating. PayPal tries to consolidate global payments. Tesla sales are down, but Bitcoin holdings help. Stocks hitting all-time highs. And a Colorado pastor charged for pushing junk coins, also known as shit coins. And House Bill directs VA, Department of Veterans Affairs, to consider blockchain for records. That is an interesting twist, especially given individuals here who may have experienced the Veterans Affairs Department and we can touch on that in a little bit. But I really wanted to kind of get everybody's take on this new development with Maxwell. We might as well get the clickbait exciting nonsense out of the way with the Epstein drama. And apparently they're going after her. Interesting. I mean, since there's no list of victims, it seems like she's been imprisoned for no reason at all. But and apparently Epstein did not suicide himself for no reason either. But they're bringing her in to testify under oath for her role in Jeffrey Epstein's victimless sex trafficking network. So she was sentenced to 20 years for conspiring with Epstein to sexually abuse minors. And she will appear before Congress on August the 11th. That's according to Newsmax and our DIB. And again, I want to extend the invitation. Anybody who wants to jump on stage, jump on in, dive into the conversation. The more interactive we are, the better. Otherwise, you get to listen to my voice, for an hour, which, you know, it's not the worst one out there. But I'm sure that there are more entertaining and more educational perspectives that can be shared in this group. So, I've got my own opinions. Probably you can tell from my tone, but what are our thoughts on this new development of Ms. Maxwell being called before Congress?
More misdirection, more stalling and saying we're going to do something and then not doing it.
Yeah, it certainly appears to be the case. You know, and I'm wondering how much mileage this beaten down vehicle has left on it. Because it keeps coming up. And obviously, I do believe that the people deserve to know the truth about this, because it's bad enough that, of course, that these types of things happen in the world. And this is not an isolated incident. We know. I mean, this type of trafficking is happening all over the place. And all reports indicate that it's happening more and more than most people are willing to acknowledge or accept. But, and yes, we do need to know the truth. However, I have to wonder, you know, how far they're going to beat this thing to death. What's going to happen with it in the end? Will we ever actually know? Or, should anybody who's ever crossed the U.S. government be ducking and covering right now? Because typically when this type of news starts becoming more and more public, bombs start falling from the sky.
Yep, that's always, if they bring up more of the Epstein stuff, it's like, what are they distracting us from? Because they've lost all credibility as far as Epstein goes, and everyone in the government seems complicit, except for Thomas Massie, who tried to get the, you know, and then he gets attacked by Trump, so I don't know what to think, and it's a lot of misdirection, and quite frankly, hard to even, you know, take anything seriously.
It really is, to the point where it's almost become laughable, which is a shame, because it is a very serious topic that should be addressed and should be approached with seriousness in actually finding the perpetrators of this, who are, I mean, committing this, you know, by the hundreds of thousands of people that are enslaved by that system. But at the same time, you know, we're focusing on, you know, the splashy news. We're focusing on, you know, what gets clicks and what's exciting and who did what. And it's just, you have to wonder if there really was a concerted effort to fight this kind of thing, we would be going after the cause of it, instead of focusing on which famous person did whatever. I mean, yes, they should be held accountable, I believe. And I also believe that if justice was the motivation here, then there would already be people that are locked up and under prisons and never ever seeing the light of day again. You know, I'm sure we could rent out some space from Bukele down there in one of his supermax no daylight prisons and just dispose of these people permanently. And I don't mean that violently. I mean as peaceful as possible, of course. But definitely swift justice is something that has not been experienced yet in this. And meanwhile, there are people running around making this happen. And I think that the bigger issue that is before us right now, not only the act of trafficking that takes place, not only the fact, because it's not an assumption, we know it's a fact that there are people in extremely powerful and influential positions that are embroiled in this. They are a part of it. And they will be implicated if the truth were to ever come out. But beyond that, I believe that one of the main obstacles here that holds this up is the fear of revealing the massive scale of all-out blackmail that takes place with those who I mentioned that are in these positions of power, that have these massive influential roles on a global scale, that has this blackmail that has been going on for decades. You know, and I'm not going to go too far down this, but it was happening in Hollywood. I mean, Vegas, I believe, was literally established to be a location to conduct blackmail operations. And, you know, it's a fun town. It's neat and all that other stuff. But man, people go out there and there's a reason they say, you know, what happens here stays here, but it doesn't. There are more cameras in that town than probably anywhere else. And they're recording everything. And that doesn't include the ones that are placed in rooms by three-letter organizations that are collecting information on individuals to get them to do what they want when they get to the floor of their respective legislative body. That's just an example. Anyway, I digress. Any final thoughts on this before we move on to the next topic? Because we could probably, well, I could probably talk about that nonsense. But I do recommend reading Whitney Webb's One Nation Under Blackmail. That book, it's hefty, but it's hefty because, and she has two volumes of it, volume one and two, but, it's hefty because she has done her homework. She has done her research, and you won't see things the same after you, dig into her content. And, you know, she's got something of a reputation for being a conspiracy theorist and all those things, but we all know on a long enough timeline, most conspiracies are going to end up holding at least some degree of truth to them. So, all right, I'm rolling on about that one. Any final thoughts on Epstein, Maxwell, and Congress?
I mean, all the attorney general had to do, guys, was come out, say it was all subject to national security review, appoint a special counsel, let it die on the vine. Instead, she botched the message.
No doubt. And you got to wonder how much of that was botched and how much of that was intentional. So it's kind of scary, but you know, I don't anticipate that we will ever, that us common human beings will ever truly know the full truth of it. And that we've got to just do our own research and trust our instincts on this and the reality of humanity. And what's more, trust, you know, believe the evidence that lies in the track record of the individuals who are handling this and the individuals who are implicated in it as well, and then move forward. I don't think anything's going to come out in these reports that's going to shake my faith in government or those in positions of power beyond where it already is. So there's nothing that's going to be make or break for me. I promise you, I'm not going to have a cartoon Captain Kirk, you know, facepalm shocked look on my face when they, you know, tell us everybody who's involved in this, because we already know. And I believe that we can just go ahead and come to the conclusion that it's all of them and they all need to be replaced. So I'm just going to leave it at that. All right. Let's move on a little bit here. I'm wondering, what the heck is going on with Thailand and freaking Cambodia? Because that's an interesting development over there. So, I mean, from what I saw in the DIB this morning, there have been some airstrikes. There have been some tensions that have been going on. And again, these misdirections, it's become second nature to look at these things and say, okay, what the hell is really going on? Because it's not what they're telling us in the story. Who's got some intel on that they'd be willing to share? It looks like Thailand is the active participant right now. They launched airstrikes on Cambodia military targets as a deadly border dispute escalates. The strike came a day after a Thai soldier lost his leg to a landmine on the border, prompting a downgrade of diplomatic ties by both Bangkok and Phnom Penh as relations collapse to their lowest level in years. To me, this is another indication of the global unrest that we're seeing. And I promise I'm not going to get dismal on you, but there are little incidents like this flaring up all over the place. And it's human's history, obviously. People are going to be in various stages of conflict. They're going to be fighting with each other. There are border disputes, you know, largely because many of these borders are false and they're implemented by Western interests over the years. And the people that actually live there don't respect these borders unless it is something that is advantageous to them and their own individual interests. But I find it interesting that these continue to pop up And especially when I see implications that we have, I say we loosely, I suppose I should say that our government and or military has any interest in these things that are taking place. It doesn't, I get a little bit froggy when I see that, Lockheed stocks are down by 8%. That's an indication that we should expect, some flare ups to occur around the world, and that we should start to see reasons, quote unquote, as to why it affects us and we should be involved in it. Because, you know, they've got all these toys that they're designing and building and releasing out into the marketplace. And if there's no use for them, then they're going to keep losing money, and they can't lose money. They're not going to allow it. They're too big to fail, as the saying goes. Thank you, Wade. I see what you shared up there. Yeah, Lockheed is down even more. 13.45%. That's pretty significant when you're an organization of that size. And again, throw up hands, comments, perspectives, share what you got. You have nothing. I'm going to keep on moving forward. All right, guys, I
had a concern. Or just real quick, I had a concern back when the whole Israeli-Iranian thing kicked off, that we were really going to get a field test for the F-35 program. And this was a lot of thing, you know, this was something that people were thinking that, hey, they might be able to push this out 30 days on a stress test or whatnot. I mean, they didn't last, what, 12, 13 days? And the very next earnings call after that, they come out and announce massive losses in the F-35 program and massive losses in classified sectors and whatnot. And then in the earnings call, you know, Lockheed goes ahead and makes their announcement and they're down 15% on the year. I mean, that's not a good, that's not a good sign. And then I agree with you, Gabe, like you're going to see bombs start falling on that. The shareholders, you know, they're not going to tolerate 15% losses. They're going to have to do something to pad that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the shareholders, they're going to put pressure on those that are making the decisions, who also, are shareholders. That are, whether they're direct shareholders or whether they receive campaign contributions, they're not going to let this just fly. And so it's important to watch what goes on behind the scenes and what decisions are being made and who's making the decisions, because those are the ones, obviously, you can always follow the money and you will find the incentives, that are sitting right out there in front of you. And it's always been the case, and it's always going to be the case. If you would like an introduction to this line of thinking, I recommend reading the book All War is a Racket. It'll open up your eyes as well to things that are really, it feels like so many of us in our sphere, we get it and we just kind of take it as a given. But I'm going to tell you that the majority of the world just do not think this way. They truly do believe that, you know, we're the good guys and everybody else is the bad guys that is, that we have to destroy them. And they celebrate when, you know, kids are getting blown up in various parts of the world by our bombs that we're providing to people that are doing these things. Wade, did you have another comment?
Yeah, I just don't want everyone to forget that the F-35 program in itself represents 5% of the entire federal budget deficit. And it's the largest government procurement in human history. And the Air Force and the DOD is already transitioning away from the F-35, calling it a transitional program until they can get to the F-47 program. And so this has turned into a $2 trillion boondoggle for a plane that only flies 50% of the time. And we only have 50% of the planes that we ordered. So you're getting about 25 cents on the dollar for what we paid. It's just a disaster.
Lord. Yeah. Yep. And we know what happens when disasters occur at that level. They're going to take action to increase their value is what they're going to do. And that's, you know, and these things are, it's the way that it's always been. This is not new. You know, even before we had mechanized warfare like this, this is how it's been. And it's been brought to you by the fiat system which has made war on massive scales possible for as long as we've had it, as long as we've had forms of money, as long as money has been required to win wars, which is always, the fiat system is what makes it possible because, you know, when push comes to shove, they're just going to hit the print button and flood the market with new dollars. And so as we all know with the Cantillon effect, the ones at the top are going to get it. And many of those are going to be part of this MIC that we're talking about. And I am shocked that we have not been tossed off of here yet, but we're just going to take it. So, all right, good. Let's drive on. One last thing from the DIB and then we'll keep on moving forward into some more positive themes, perhaps. It looks like Obama is in the spotlight, in regards to the Russia hoax, as we'll call it. But, I gotta tell you, there are a lot of people in the political system, in the government that are just garbage, that, we can't trust. There's just no way. The track record is there. You can't trust them. And this is just about all of them, but man, there is one that I just continue to be, inspired by, and that's Tulsi Gabbard. She's a veteran. I believe she's still in the National Guard, if I'm not mistaken. She's an officer. And for those that aren't familiar, National Guard is not full-time military. It's kind of part-time. So they'll have a civilian job. For hers, it's, intelligence. She works in DC, and then part-time she'll go out and she'll do military things. And so I can tell you, as seeing the way that she has conducted herself over her time in the public eye has just been, I'll use the word again. It's been inspiring and it's been refreshing. And I'm surprised that she hasn't been run out of DC again. I think that she came kind of close, a little while back when Trump came out and was like, I don't care what she says, whatever, whatever. But again, I believe that was part of the theater, that was taking place at that point. And I believe that that was intentional misdirection when it came to the the bombs that we threw at Iran. But, anyway, so Gabbard says, quote, the evidence that we have found and that we have released directly point to President Obama leading the manufacturing of this intelligence assessment, meaning the Russia involvement in the, in Trump's campaigns and so forth. So she's coming after him, which I think is, I think it's an important move. And I'm wondering how much steam that's going to hold. Obviously, you know, although he is not in office anymore, I believe that Obama, former President Obama, probably retained as much, if not more, power than any other previous president before him. And he is definitely very heavily involved in many things that are going on in many ways right now. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that administration definitely left a lot of landmines laying around before they exited. That's pretty obvious. And it looks like Tulsi's hanging on for now. You know, she obviously, there was a lot of pressure on her to resign regarding some of the Iranian stuff and whatnot. But, you know, sometimes people have to make decisions that they think staying on is better for the country than leaving. She has no influence if she leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. And she could have walked away, because she's been sniped. She's been pushed out by her own party in the past because, for all of her public behavior would indicate that she is a person of integrity and she's not there to win political points. She's not there to gain position. Although I think that she would be a tremendous candidate to run for perhaps even the highest office. I would probably vote for her. We know that she's a Bitcoiner. She's very public about that. She has spoken at the big conferences, talking about the freedom implications of Bitcoin, which is really what sealed the deal, for me when it comes to Tulsi Gabbard. But, I mean, her previous record was already amazing, but then her coming up and throwing that out there as, as early as, the first time I saw her speak about it publicly was in Miami in 2023. And she was balls to the walls all about it. So I, at that point I said, yep, she's the one. But yeah, hopefully she can keep it together and not be waylaid or tossed out of DC. I think that with her, one of the good things about her is they're going to have a real hard time finding dirt on somebody like that. When somebody is willing to stand up and oppose the status quo in the way that she has proven that she is willing to do, they typically have the least amount of skeletons in their closet and tend to be people of the greatest integrity, which I believe is what our country needs more than anything right now. So, all right, one last touch on the DIB, and that's the new Swiss shitcoin that's backed by gold, apparently. That's interesting. There's a note in the DIB that actually indicates that, you know, this might have been a good idea if Bitcoin didn't already exist. But yeah, it looks like the Swiss, they're doing their thing, and they're going to back each of their coins, a stable coin, by 0.1 grams of fine gold. What do we think? Does this thing have legs? Is it going to make it? What's the? It probably doesn't help their case that they just found a gazillion tons of gold on an asteroid floating in space that they're probably going to bring here. So, what do we think about the Swiss and their gold backed stable coin?
Aren't the French right next door making gold in a nuclear breeder reactor now?
Yeah, are they? It wouldn't surprise me.
Now, there was a news article on it. Mario posted it. Who knows if it's true, though? But yeah, you never know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the funny thing, the asteroid that I referred to, there was an article out there. Obviously, nothing is reputable in the news sphere, but they said there's enough gold on there to make everybody on the planet a billionaire. So I guess that's pretty exciting news, right? But of course, you know, if your shoes and your silverware and your car and your house are all made out of gold, I don't know how that really is impacted by a total lack of scarcity when it comes to the value of a type of money. But I think that it's not a good thing for gold bugs. Yeah, I know that if I was heavily invested in something like gold, and there was only a certain amount of it that was showing up all the time and that existed in the world, and then that amount was significantly increased, I probably feel like the thing that I owned wasn't worth quite as much. But who knows? But I do know one thing that can't happen with, and that's definitely Bitcoin. They're not going to go out and find an asteroid in space with another 21 million Bitcoin locked up in it that they're going to go ahead and dig out, which is pretty fantastic. Because even gold, you know, if the French are making it in the lab now, and if we got asteroids that they're going to be crashing on the planet that are just full of this stuff, you might want to diversify your portfolio a little bit and sell some of your gold and buy Bitcoin with it, because they're not finding any more of that. All right, let's move on to some more positive things. It's Thursday, so, you know, let's talk about some things we're thankful for. So thankful Thursday. So if anybody, again, you know, put your hand up, come on up, join us on the stage, share something that you're thankful about today. And I'll start since I'm already putting miles on my microphone here. I'm thankful for this, for the people in this room right now. I'm thankful for the Bitcoin veterans community. We started this thing about a little over 2 years ago now, and we have brought some amazing people together, and this thing is, it truly has become a decentralized human revolution. We are a leaderless group of people this group is self-driven, self-motivated. We have people that just, I mean, they're just jumping up and engaging in action. And as soon as they become a part of this, they're just showing up and bringing what they got. And I'm telling you, the skills that these individuals have, it's staggering to me. the not only the potential impact that we have that we can make, but the impact that is already being realized and the way that people are committing themselves to something bigger than the individual, the way that people are contributing to a team and openly sharing their knowledge, and the way that iron is sharpening iron is the only thing I can compare it to as far as this level of camaraderie goes is actually being in the military, except without all the bullshit. So it's pretty amazing. And, also not being puppets of a military industrial complex that wants us to die. So that part is pretty amazing. And that's something that I'm thankful for. So everybody who's in here, I've met a lot of you in person. A lot of us are, you know, we still remain in the online virtual zone as friends. And I look forward to meeting as many of you in person as possible. But, yeah, that's what I'm thankful for. So thanks everybody for being here. Who's next?
Gabe, good morning. I only got a minute. Over at the in-laws, and we got, 8 kids under 5 between us all around here. So it's, pretty crazy, but that's exactly what I'm thankful for. We got a wonderful group of young families and, trying to, you know, open their eyes a little bit to Bitcoin and what it can provide for small communities and families. And, they've kind of seen the light and in my life and what it's been able to do for my family and allow me to, you know, the financial freedom to grow my family and not be, not be anxious about the future and be hopeful about the future. Want more and more kids. So thankful for that. Thankful for you guys. And, I'll be on and off, but over the next couple days, but, just thankful for that.
Man, that is amazing. And yeah, I haven't jumped in here a whole lot since Bitcoin Alaska, but I can tell you that was one thing that stood out to me was the amount of families that were there. Bitcoiners are repopulating the world, and it's exciting. And there's this level of optimism that exists among this community that I don't see in other groups of people in the rest of the world. Most people are just they're concerned, they're stressed. They're fearful of the future. And for that reason, many of them just are choosing not to have kids at all. And Bitcoin, it's so much more. It's so much more than just, you know, money or, you know, trading or getting rich or any of those things. It truly does provide the peace of mind that allows us to have that perspective of the future and to bring more people into this world, knowing that we have the opportunity to create a future that's going to be a good one for them. That's awesome, man. What else we got?
Gabe, we had a baby boy, since we met you in Nashville. And so that's been a great experience for us, and we're definitely thankful for that. And what we also wanted to say was, the efforts that you guys and the fellow Bitcoin veterans have taken regarding the disaster relief, particularly here in Western North Carolina and East Tennessee, and what also the disaster coordination relief down in Texas, and the guys being able to make permissionless, instantaneous payments for relief groups who needed aviation gasoline. I mean, that I've never seen anything like that in my entire life. And when we were getting no help from the previous administration and no real serious National Guard response. I mean, it took weeks for 18th Airborne Corps and the 82nd Airborne Division logistics guys to get mobilized. And in the meantime, we were paying guys avgas to fly in supplies to people who were stranded on mountaintops. It was never seen anything like it. It was amazing.
Yeah, amen to that. Yeah, it was, I mean, it felt like there was a divine hand that was involved in that. Just the way that everybody showed up, and not only those on the team that were on the ground, that were on site, that were improving the situation there as much as they could, but the entire community who stepped up and contributed and made it possible. It was just, I mean, it still gives me goosebumps when I think about it, the way that everybody showed up. It's more than just a group of veterans that sit around talking about Bitcoin. When the need was there, we took action. And not only, again, those that physically went there, but everybody, and I know a lot of you are in this room right now, but everybody who just stepped up and just poured into it and made it happen. It was humbling and amazing. And I think that it sent a message that, Bitcoin veterans and Bitcoiners in general, when there's a need, we're in a position and have the motivation to get involved and to help, because really that's what we're doing on a broader scale. And many times it's on a day by day basis, whether it's sharing Signal, whether it's building relationships, whether it's teaching people about it in our communities, we're always working, we're always building. But then when there's an immediate, dire need like this, to be able to jump into action and make it happen is really something that is, that I think is unique right now in this world. So that's amazing, man. Thanks for sharing that. All right. Anybody else got a couple other things that I want to touch on? But if we have any moments of gratitude anybody would like to share, then please feel free.
Yeah. I'm thankful for the inspiration that, that Bitcoin gives, and just gives you hope for the future. And like, I figured it out in 2021, and you know, 2020 put us all in a dark spot with that COVID nonsense and the level of control that was coming down. And I don't know, Bitcoin just switches that and made my mind a completely different, entity. And I'm just inspired, you know, by what the future is going to be like. But yeah, I'm also thankful for the space in a lighter note, but that's it.
Yeah, man. And you're so right. And it's, you know, we hear that a lot, that as unpleasant and disruptive as that whole period of time was for so many people, it was eye opening. And similar to the 2008 crisis, which, you know, spawned the necessity and the actual, discovery/invention of Bitcoin, it the time was right. And I believe that that whole experience in 2020, 21, 22, with all of the stuff that came along with it, with the shutdowns, with the vaccinations, with the, with the people being thrown out of the military for exercising their constitutional rights, it opened up a lot of people's eyes. And I think a lot of people are still recognizing it, that Bitcoin is such a huge part of that. But that, I believe, was a catalyst moment for a lot of people to begin questioning what we're being told, to start asking those deeper questions. Like, why would we just give up our freedom because they say so? You know, why is this fear controlling us so much? And I don't want to take away from the severity of what happened with COVID, because people did die and it was awful. But the freedoms that we sacrificed voluntarily in general as a whole, it brought a lot of people to question, you know, when their minds sobered up, and when they finally saw the light and recognized, wait a minute, this isn't right. This is a definite overreach. Then people started to question, okay, well, how can we avoid this in the future? And then that natural course brings people into Bitcoin, obviously. So while it was horrible, all of those types of situations that we experience as humans, it can shake us up and require us to ask that question: what the hell's going on here? And how can we avoid things like this in the future? So yeah. That's good, man. Thanks for sharing that perspective. All right. Let's jump forward with a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. This time is flying by. There's something that I'm hoping we can get a little discussion going on. And that is the migration towards Bitcoin that we're seeing, occur in the world. You know, we've got BlackRock, we've got Fidelity, we've got governments, we've got policies, we've got institutional shifting taking place. We have more and more people. We got, Cramer talking about it again. Ignore him, but it's not going away, obviously. Okay. And many in this space are probably also not being looked at like you're such a weirdo as much as in the past. And people are probably coming to you and asking you questions like they are with me. I'm getting random texts on my phone from people I haven't spoken to in years saying, hey, I see you got this, Bitcoin stuff going on. Yeah, I got some questions. You know, should I use this company? Should I do this and that? But we've got this migration. It's undeniable. It's happening. And I'm wondering what are some ways that we can support that migration with those who are ready to take those steps? What are we doing in this space? And again, anybody who wants to come up, please come on up on the stage, share your story. All are welcome. Come on up. Just please don't shitcoin and we'll all get along fine. But, yeah, what are some things that we're doing, in our circles of influence to help people migrate, from the fiat world into Bitcoin? I'll throw out an example go ahead.
Hey Gabe, I'll jump in real quick. Not anything specific to, you know, something that, people are doing, but really it's a lot of mindset shift, I think. And so I posted, something up to the nest and it's kind of one of those, at least for me, it was a insightful kind of head explosion moment. And really I'll kind of go over it. So it shows, you know, the halving schedule, and I focused in on Bitcoin circulating supply. And a lot of people think that like today, one entire Bitcoin or one whole coin is pretty expensive. And that's absolutely true. But if you look at the very last whole coin, it's going to take over 40 years to mine that last whole coin. To put that in perspective, every 10 minutes at the current block height and the current epoch, 3.125 is getting mined every 10 minutes. And so really that's just how unbelievably early we are in Bitcoin. And this kind of ties into the previous conversation. Me personally, I'm thankful to have discovered Bitcoin and to have discovered this community and discovered, you know, all the amazing people that I've met either virtually or in real life at different conferences, because we are in this journey. And again, you know, Bitcoin is only 16 years old and it's going to take more than double that to get to that last coin. And so what does that afford us now is an opportunity of probably unbelievable potential on what we can do to improve our own personal lives, the lives of our family and our friends around us, as well as the opportunity to improve society as a whole. So I think that, you know, sharing little tidbits like that to kind of open people's perspective on Bitcoin and, you know, that absolute finite scarcity, provable and, you know, scheduled out. It's not governed by 12 people in a room. It's governed by code. And, you know, we say it a lot in Bitcoin, you know, it's rules without rulers. And I think that that's one of the superpowers and massive unlocks for Bitcoin.
Amen to that. Awesome. All right, Hunter, is your hand up?
Yeah. I really like what AC said, because I was going to kind of touch on that too. I think we need to play our part as educators and let them know how early we still are. And, you know, I like to kind of paint them a picture of a future that maybe we as Bitcoiners can see that, you know, normies can't really see yet. And explain that, you know, this is coming. It's going to be safe. You know, it's not just for drug dealers on the internet or, you know, there's all that old FUD of people had when they maybe were exposed to Bitcoin or heard about it, you know, 5 years ago or whatever. And the fact that, you know, banks are custodying it, that it's, you know, the ETFs are out there, that Bitcoin is being normalized and they still have a chance to kind of front run it before it's going to be forced on everyone. Cause, you know, I do believe that Bitcoin's going to take over completely, and by that time they won't benefit as much as they can benefit right now. So best time to buy Bitcoin was yesterday, and second best time is today, and they need to start getting off of zero. And I think our obligation is to kind of normalize it for it, paint the picture, show them where we're heading, this future that we can see that they can't, and that it's not some scary thing, that they need to get off of zero yesterday.
Amen. Yeah, well said. Yeah, because I get that comment too. People feel like they're too late, you know. And AC, this chart that you shared, I think that's very powerful, because it's like saying that you're too late to the internet. No, just jump in, go ahead. You know, yeah, it probably would have been better 10 years ago, but yeah, the second best time is right now. Get started. Let's go. And this is a question that I get from a lot of the veterans that I work with, just teaching them the fundamentals of Bitcoin, through Operation Bitcoin, is they say, well, you know, I'm never going to be able to afford a Bitcoin. How do I do this? And I say, look, just open up your phone and let's go. And I show them you can just get $5 worth of Bitcoin right now. And then, you know, let's talk in a couple of weeks and I'll show you how to, you know, do it in a different way that's going to be, you know, that's going to be more scalable for you, and then how to secure it. But people, they do have it in their mind that they missed the boat. It's too late. It's over. This doesn't apply to me. This is for investors. This is for traders. This is for people who want yachts and all those other things. But it truly is for everybody, and being able to show them, first of all, that there is a future that is possible, that isn't one that has to be controlled by fear and uncertainty and debasement of your money and wondering how you're going to buy eggs for your family. You can actually plan for a future, and you can create a different timeline for your grandkids and their kids starting right now. And so that first most important thing is to take that first step. I found that it's important to meet people where they are, really. And I think we've talked about it in here a few times, but, you know, meeting people where they are. I have a relative who's in her 70s, and she's kind of Bitcoin curious. She knows that something's going on. It helps that she's a little bit of a conspiracy theorist. She doesn't quite trust the system. She's been around long enough to know that, you know, things aren't going the right direction. And so she's asking questions. And her birthday is coming up at the end of the month. And so I'm giving her a couple of books that I know speak to her place in life and to her perspective. And it's going to be life-changing for her, I believe, because she is wondering what to do as she approaches the end of life, and how to best position her wealth to pass it on to the people that she's leaving here when she goes. And so this is, I believe, something that, you know, even for somebody at that stage, and I know we talk, you know, we kind of talk down about boomers sometimes, and it is what it is. There's just that generational back talk that we have that goes back and forth between all of us. But it's, you know, they have influence as well. They have lives as well, and they have futures as well that, you know, extend beyond their own lifespan that they're thinking about. And for us to be able to put something like this in front of them and to show them the truth and let them know, look, your assets don't have to just dwindle away after you're gone. You don't have to leave your kids with a bucket full of holes in it as the water drains out, even as you're taking your last breath. You can leave them something that you know is going to continue to increase in value and position your family for the future. So, all right. What else do we have on this topic? We're actually getting pretty close to time. So what do we got? Hunter, is your hand still up?
Yeah, I was going to mention something. When you talk about, you know, orange pilling people, you kind of got to meet them where they are. And I think age plays an important role in that. I'm 40 years old, so I grew up pre-internet, and then I grew up with the internet at a very, you know, foundational age for me. I grew up with it. And I think, you know, comparing Bitcoin to like an emerging technology, such as the internet, some people can really understand that because they've seen what it looks like, where it was just this niche thing and then it's taken over and everyone's got it. And I like to say that like Bitcoin's in kind of like the AOL stage of the internet. Like, you know, people are starting to get it. You know, you meet people that are Bitcoiners, but it's not so widespread where it's becoming everyone's got the internet 24/7. And I think if you can put it in that kind of perspective, some people it'll click when you compare it to not just internet money or, you know, anything like that, but like an emerging technology like the internet and how that has scaled and that Bitcoin's on a similar trajectory. That can be helpful to orange pilling as well. I just wanted to add that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's an excellent point. It's more than just money. And then when you start to get into all the other implications of it, when you talk about energy use and how, you know, it's actually good for, it's good for the environment and it's good for, harnessing energy that's otherwise being stranded or wasted. There are so many different implications. And I tell you, one of the part that has stood out to me the most, beyond generational wealth, is really just the philosophical side of these things, how it requires us and creates the opportunity for people to think on a different wavelength when it comes to how they plan out their life and how they look at their life. Instead of living a life where you know you have to spend your money before it loses its value, which we see magnified in other places like Venezuela and Zimbabwe over the years, where people know that there's a place where they can store their wealth that has been earned through the investment and the expenditure of their time, when they know that it's put into something that will literally be able to be transported into the future. It changes the way that we look at life. It changes the way that we look at our relationships. It changes the way that we can appear and show up and engage and participate in our own lives and the lives of the people that we are sharing it with. So it really, it just brings an entirely different perspective on how we engage, which to me, I think is one of the most important things, because that is truly our scarcest asset, is our time. We want to make sure that we're using it in a way that holds value, that we're building relationships instead of stressing about how we're going to make things work, that we're investing in our families and growing our families and having families instead of not planning for the future, instead of not bringing people here to replace us when we're gone. We can actually create an entirely new phase of human humanity. That was redundant, but you know what I mean. Mike Hobart, I'm going to drop a plug for Mike, but Mike Hobart, Bitcoin veteran, he has a book that he released very recently called The Second Renaissance, which I believe really captures a lot of these concepts very effectively. He's a brilliant thinker, and I recommend checking it out. It's everywhere that you can find your books, but it's we're at a different spot. We're in a different place right now. We're in a place right now that we could not have been under the fiat system that we are breaking free from. And to me, I believe that us knowing the truth, it almost obligates us in a way to tell other people about it. We've got to. There's no point in receiving a gift like this knowledge that we have, and then keeping it hidden and putting it under a basket, if you will, and not letting that light shine out. Yes, that's a scriptural reference, but I feel like we have to do it. And fortunately, so many of us are motivated to do that. When we find out about it, we're like, I got to tell everybody about it. It's almost as bad as CrossFitters. You know, you don't have to ask them if they're a CrossFitter, but, people that, you know, when we get on fire for this, we start telling everybody we know about it because it's exciting and we know it's revolutionary.
I'm a CrossFitter.
I knew it. You had to tell us, didn't you? shit, thank you. But yeah, that's, anyway, I kind of, got off the point there a little bit, I think, but, yeah, what are some other ways that y'all have seen that are helping people, with their migration into Bitcoin? And if nothing else, then we can move on. There are a couple of upcoming events I want to share with everybody, and then we'll wrap it up.
I've beat it into my children's
heads and my wife and anyone really around me by just wearing shirts, t-shirts that, you know, are Bitcoin orientated. And I wear them all to the gym now, and not one, these people at CrossFit just do not care about Bitcoin. I mean, they're like, we hit all time highs. No one even mentioned it. It's amazing to me, like how people just don't pay attention or they don't want to talk about money at all. But yeah, I found now I don't wear them as much, but still wear them to the gym.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, it's because it requires a little bit of an ego check to admit that they don't know everything that there is to know about money, because people in general like to feel like they present an image that, okay, I got it going on. I'm at a certain age in life and I know what I'm doing here. You know, I got it. I got my game down. I got my hustle and I'm doing okay. But accepting Bitcoin as a mindset is so much more than just saying, hey, look, this is something that I can invest in and I can, you know, get a Lambo. It requires a total restructuring of the way that we see the world. And for a lot of people, that can quite frankly be a challenge. I can tell you one thing, as far as family is concerned, if you're going to these events, if you're going to conferences, Bitcoin conferences and meetups and things like that, bring your family with you. I took my family up to Alaska for Bitcoin Alaska, and almost all my clothing has Bitcoin stuff on it, and they hear me talk about it all the time, and they're, you know, it's kind of like, okay, that's something that you're into, obviously, but bring them around other Bitcoiners and let them see that it's not just some crazy thing that you're into, or that you just love the color orange all of a sudden. Bring them around other Bitcoiners and other Bitcoiners' families. It changes things. On the entire way back from Alaska, I was answering questions from my family about Bitcoin, about, you know, well, what about this? Well, how about that? And just they were curious all of a sudden to learn about it and to know about it. And so sometimes it just requires kind of like walking in and being the example. And then when people are ready, they'll start asking questions because, you know, it's not always our voice that's going to be the one that gets across to people. And, you know, a prophet is without honor in their hometown, they say, and it's not always going to be us. It's like, you can tell your kid something a billion times, but then when they meet, you know, a teacher at school that tells them the same thing, the messenger matters and it's going to dawn on them. And it's just the way that it is. So. But it's all right. You know, we gotta stay the course and try not to get frustrated and share what we know. And then also bring them around it, because there's a lot of cool Bitcoiners out there. And, you never know which one is going to be able to say something to someone in your family, that's going to mean something in a way that was different from the way that you did. So, yeah, it's actually, Adam O'Brien. From Bitcoin Well, he was up there and he had a conversation, with my teenage daughter about Bitcoin. He had a presentation talking about, Christianity and Bitcoin, and my daughter's very, very focused on growing in her faith. And so it sparked a conversation, and it was that, conversation that really began to shift the way that she sees things. And so it was very valuable, but you never know where it's going to come from. So, all right, we need to move on. It's the top of the hour. I want to share a couple of events that are coming up. So, first of all, I don't know if anybody's heading up to Vancouver in the middle of August. There's a Learning Bitcoin conference up there. It's their second one, and it looks like it's going to be amazing. It's preceded by a Mepreneur Bitcoin Unconference, which will be on August 15th. And then, the Learning Bitcoin conference will be on the 16th and 17th. I'm going to be up there. There's going to be a couple other Bitcoin veterans that are going. We have been challenged to, participate in, I think it's called the Grouse Grind, which is basically the walk up the side of a mountain that is supposed to be devastating. And I think most people probably just die on the path, but I have accepted the challenge, and, I'm encouraging as many people to join as possible, so we can motivate each other up that hill. that's coming. Learning Bitcoin, it's easy to find. They've got the side event. They've got the unconference on there, which are amazing events. All right, BTC in DC, that's coming up September 30th and October 1st. Yes, that's going to be up in Washington, D.C. It is being put on by the University of George Washington. They're going to be making some announcements, all of the big names that you would expect. They're going to be up there. I'm going to be up there. Operation Bitcoin is going to have a contingent of individuals up there that are representing and providing resources, educational resources, primarily to veterans who are in attendance up there. And I know that we have a handful of us that were at the Bitcoin Policy Summit that that were very effective in representing Bitcoin veterans up there. So come on out. Tickets are on sale right now. We did get a discount code for that, BTC Vets, 10% off, BTC Vets. So hop on their website, punch in the code, you get 10% off. And then, of course, in November, the Bitcoin Veterans Summit at Bitcoin Park in Nashville. That's going to be November 10th and 11th for the official days. The 10th is going to be a day of workshops, hanging out, building community, learning from one another, doing a bunch of veteran type stuff, and really just connecting in person, because there's nothing like real life veterans in person that that are also Bitcoiners. All are invited, of course. So come on up. It's going to be good. I believe we're still accepting some proposals for anybody who would like to lead a workshop. We're going to be talking about all kinds of stuff. So mining, I believe we're going to be talking about Meshtastic. We're going to be talking about anything that is Bitcoin related that you could possibly imagine. Then on the 11th, we've got a range day. So this is for all levels. Come on out. Get your pew pew on. If you've never picked up a pistol in your life, then we got a place for you. We're going to have professional expert instructors on hand that are ready to work with people of all levels. If you're John Wick, then come on up there and we got a spot for you too. Show us how it's done safely. And then, I believe on the 12th, there's a Nostra event. It's not connected to our event, but it is an event that a lot of us are going to be attending. So that is it for the upcoming events as far as the ones that I am aware of right now. And then, of course, later on that week, Adopting Bitcoin is taking place down in El Salvador. If you haven't been to that, it's awesome. If you've never been to El Salvador, I recommend that you go. It's not perfect. I know a lot of Bitcoiners like to prop it up and say that it's a paradise and all that. They have their own struggles. The things they're dealing with the IMF right now, but I will tell you that the concentration of Bitcoiners there is very strong. And if you want to connect with some amazing people, that is a really good place to do it. I'll be down there. So, get your ticket. Come on down. If I can get on a stage, I'm going to get on a stage and I'm going to talk about Operation Bitcoin and Bitcoin veterans and the work that that all of us are doing in this group. So looks like it's 11:07. Do we have any closing thoughts before we hang up this spaces?
Self-custody.
Wise words. Get your Bitcoin off of exchanges. When your Bitcoin is on an exchange, it's not your Bitcoin. Okay. Self-custody is the only way. We have resources. If you want to connect with our group, hop on our website, bitcoinveterans.org. You do not have to be a veteran. We have chat groups of multiple topics. More and more topics are springing up all the time just based on what people are interested in. It's a decentralized group, self-led, lots of veterans, lots of civilians, lots of people that want freedom, and they want to find community where they can all find freedom together. And this is it, and this is where it's happening. Self-custody, if there are no final thoughts, then I do want to encourage everybody to have a great day, first of all. Move around. If you haven't exercised yet, exercise. Take your eyes off the screen for a little while. Go out there and look at some natural daylight. Call somebody that you haven't talked to in a while. Find a way to do something that's going to increase the level of freedom in your life and in the lives of the people around you. And bottom line, don't shitcoin. Don't shitcoin. It's bad for your health. It's like eating sushi at a gas station in Tijuana at 3 o'clock in the morning. Stay away from it, guys. It's not good for you. All right. Hey, thanks everybody for being here. We will be back tomorrow for Freedom Friday. keep doing what you're doing, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for getting on the stage today. Thank you for the contributions to the conversation. I appreciate it more than y'all can ever know. So let's keep iron sharpening iron, and let's go ahead and do this thing. Stay on the mission.